This is
Genatset Hayer,
a toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on the Ignotainment Media Network.
Parluis, inchpes, Genatset Hayer. Hey, that was a great show we had last week, Chris.
Oh, man, it was really good.
And the guys are still contacting me and saying, hey, you know what? We had a great time. And that's what we like to have on this show. Everyone that contacts us back and say, you know what? They've had a great time. And they felt at ease.
Yeah.
So it's really working out. And I checked out every country that we are getting to right now. We are all the way from Belgium to Russia, to Armenia, to yeah. Argentina. It's amazing. It's just not in United States. I mean, we're getting heard from worldwide.
It is amazing. Yeah, but those guys were awesome. I've actually, ever since we had them on, I've heard a whole lot of their stuff online, and I enjoy it. Microphone. I like that song.
I do, too.
It's a good song. I've listened to it like five times.
What? I didn't think I could get into new rap, but I really did like their song.
Too.
And Ed Ivansky, another toast to you guys. Keep doing what you're doing. And it doesn't end on Ervansky, because now we've got another guest.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good show.
Oh, it's going to be
too.
A great show. Great show. And let's not hold back here, because I got a lot of things to cover with this guest. And Bedyan, it is so great to have you on our show. Chris, I tell you what, Anne Bedyan, she's been involved in so many movies and TV shows. And great to have you on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I mean, when I found out, I got to tell you something. I'm a big fan of Larry David and the Curb Your Enthusiasm. And when I found out that you were that Palestinian in that restaurant, I said, oh, my God, I have got to have her on our show.
Did you know I was Armenian then?
I swear to God, I said she's either Armenian or she's Jewish. I said that, and I had to look the credits up, and then I said, bingo, I knew she was Armenian. And I mean, there's something that attracts us to a fellow Armenians. We know when we see another Armenian. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
And you started off, though, I did a little background check on you, and you were part of the Canadian military. How cool is that?
Yeah, I served in the Navy for 3 years because I was born in Montreal. I'm Canadian.
Right.
But, so I joined the Navy just shy of turning 18. So I had to let my parents, I had to convince my parents to release me to the Department of National Defense because I wasn't allowed, I wasn't of legal age to do it on my own yet. So that, you can imagine, an Armenian family was quite controversial. They were like, what?
Wow.
Who goes to the army? I mean, you know, what are people going to say about us? And I was like, oh, here we go. You know, it's about you guys. So it was not an easy task. It was more difficult to convince my parents than actually get into the military, I think. But yeah, I went to boot camp, and then I became the second woman in Canada with my trade at the time. And it was a great experience. I mean, I traveled the world for 3 years. I've crossed the Arctic Circle. I've sailed through the Fjord Islands in Norway. I've done, I served over 180 days on NATO tours.
Now, what were your missions while you were sailing along the seven seas, you might say?
Well, mostly it was on NATO tours. And what NATO does is there's always somewhere in an ocean, there's always a NATO fleet, which means every country must provide one ship at all times. So there's a fleet of about 7 or 8 ships sailing together. And when, let's say, the Canadians pull out, another Canadian ship replaces it, and then the NATO just keeps going on. And basically what it is, it's just exercises at sea continuously, learning and working together. So God forbid we get in a situation like Desert Storm or any other wars. When we're at sea, we know how to operate and communicate and work together as allies.
Right.
So when our signalman is sending a message, all the other militaries know what that message is and can understand each other and plan and coordinate in unity.
Wow. Hey, Chris, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, no. And this is steering off in a separate, I think familiar direction. You know, with your experience, in the Navy, and I'm a huge NCIS fan, and I saw that you did an episode of NCIS, and obviously that also relates, into the Navy and the Armed Forces. So I was interested to hear about your experience on NCIS and working with Harmon and some of these amazing. I mean, that's it's the highest rated show on television. It has a lot of fans.
Right. Well, NCIS. So my characters that I tend to portray. Here's the problem. A lot of times there are military characters that I go out for, and they'll be like, "Well, she's just not believable." And because I'm 5'2" and I'm very small, and I don't have that stereotypical image of a soldier.
Sure.
And so my team will be like, "Well, what do you mean it's not believable? She really was in the military.
Yeah,
she's
a
soldier.
She's
a vet." You know? They're like, "Yeah, but it's just not believable," you know? So it's kind of, so my characters a lot of times on these procedural shows or, military, whatever, will be more of like character-driven characters versus like somebody who's actually in the military. I mean, I've done The Unit, which is a highly trained team of, and I've done NCIS, and I played like a mother in both of them, fierce mothers, strong women, but certainly not part of the military. Especially if they're casting for anything in the Middle East, you wouldn't have that because they don't have female soldiers like they do in the United States anyways.
Yep.
So, it was on both those shows, I played just like one of them was like the mother of the family, and the unit takes over the apartment basically to operate on one of their soldiers. So they sort of hold us, hostage in our own home.
Interesting.
And and I played like a mother who's just basically threatens them to, "I'm going to jump out the window and notify, our rebel troops that you're here if you touch a hair on my child," basically. So it's situations like that. Yeah.
I tell you what, too, that episode with Lost, where you got that on a clip, that was amazing. I mean, you really felt, I was watching it and I really felt like I could relate to what was going on. I don't know why I could relate, but I was just feeling like, wow, there's something happening here with the husband and wife, and he hasn't. I mean, that was great acting. I mean, it really was. It was beautiful.
Thank you. I had a friend from, I had a few people, but one specifically I knew from Philadelphia who said, I really felt like there was at one point a monologue in that on that show where I get him to say sorry for what he did.
Right.
And he said, that almost felt like you as an Armenian talking to the Turkish government, getting them to admit, for all the pain and everything you've suffered, that it was high time that they just had to admit what they did, and they were responsible. So, and I think somewhere from the depths of my soul, that is probably where that came from.
That is so true. Maybe that's how I related with that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Hey, I gotta ask you though. I gotta ask you. And how was it working with my guy? I've seen every episode. I know you probably get it 100,000 times. But Larry David, unbelievable. Is he like that for real, or how is that guy?
I mean, well, like he says, he says Larry David on the show is a happier version of Larry without the show or not on the show. Because on the show, he actually gets to respond to a situation how he really would like to but wouldn't in real life because he's not a sociopath.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was just incredible. And what's more incredible about that show is nothing is scripted, so everything is just improvised.
No way. That was beautiful.
And, Yeah,
I
and
never
we have
knew
nothing
that.
To plan. We don't even have a daily like guideline of anything. We have an idea of what has to happen in the scene, but not word for word or not what comes out of your mouth. And I think that's part of the magic with Curb, is because nobody's driving it. There's no automatic response. You're not planning on anything. So anything can come out, and that's where I think the magic stuff sort of happens, you know.
There's no question.
I think, yeah, too, on that episode, I, again, as an Armenian, I can relate to this as well, because now I pictured how an Armenian and a Turk, like, not to that extent, of course, uh-huh, but I'm saying to that restaurant, I mean, how cool would be one day that Armenians and Turks can go to each other's restaurants and so forth? You know, that, I mean, that's down the line, I know, with the whole April 24th, they have to recognize that and so forth. But, you know, it gives, like, the Palestinian and the Jewish man. I mean, that was like a real On the French type of episode right there that Larry messed with, and it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, that was actually, you know, especially at the end with the two restaurants, like, you know, they were protesting the opening of,
yes,
the Palestinian Chicken in front. And that was a little bit tied into what was going on with 9/11, when they want to build a mosque by the site
of
to
course.
Remember all the Muslims that had died, and they were protesting it, and you can't, this is a holy whatever, you did this, you know. So he found a way. I mean, he's brilliant at this stuff, you know. All we do is just fill in the void with our dialogue, but the storyline and the arcs, it's all Larry's stuff. And I think that's why working with HBO, he's not, you know, that it had been 2 years since the previous season, and if he doesn't have anything brilliant, he just won't do another episode or a season.
So
season 8, when we shot it, it's been the last season since he did it, and I mean, so the actual idea and the concept and everything is basically Larry David. We just sort of come in and fill up the dialogue. For me, especially when I have an audition, I get the sides, like the papers and what I have to learn and study, and that's what I spend my time doing. But when you go for a Larry David audition, you can't study it. There's nothing to study, so you don't know what you're preparing.
Wow.
It's very difficult, and they literally just slip you a piece of paper with what has to happen in the scene when you walk through the door. And if you make it past a certain round, then you go up in front of Larry David. He personally auditions all the actors. So you basically go in a room with Larry and improvise with him in a room as part of your producer session for the auditions.
How many did you beat out
the other
that day?
HBO people. What?
How many did you beat out that day on the audition?
Oh, well, there's an initial audition where I don't know how many they're seeing, because I have a scheduled appointment time. So if my appointment's at 3:00, maybe I'll see the people before me and the
right.
people after. But then if you go to producers, where Larry will be, then they'll be usually running a little bit behind, and they'll schedule people like in 10-minute intervals. So, you know, I saw at least 6 or 7 in the room when I got there. I don't know how many were there before and how many went there after me.
Oh, sure.
That is
so
great.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Anne, when you were growing up in Canada, were you guys first-generation Armenian or second, or how did that go?
Yes, I'm first-generation Canadian. My parents came from Syria.
Syria.
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
Uh-huh.
Isn't that tragic, what's going on over there?
Oh, it's, yeah, devastating. It, you know, started, like, you know, over 3 years ago now, and it's just deteriorated. I think our population of Armenians is down to less than 10,000 from over 100,000.
Oh,
it's really bad. There's still a lot of work being done here from the Syrian Armenian Relief Fund. I had a little fundraiser thing going, and I helped about 17 people. I got a lot of families to Armenia. I got a pregnant woman, 8-month pregnant woman, on the last flight that ever left Syria to Armenia.
Oh, bravo.
2.5 years ago. Yeah, so she had the baby. So the baby's a Hayasansi, because the baby's born in Armenia
now. God bless her. God bless
yeah,
her.
Yeah, so we had some good things in that way happen, you know. And my some relatives that I brought there, they baptized the child in Etchmiadzin. So that was a first in our generations, because we were all born outside the homeland and nobody's actually baptized in Armenia. So that happened. So, I mean, thank God Armenia is not too far away. And as an Armenian, you don't need a visa or application. You know, you just have to be Armenian and you can just go in. You don't have to pay anything. You don't have to have a passport. So
how are they adjusting? How are they adjusting
in Armenia,
to Armenia?
I mean, here's the problem. We've all lived with Armenia as our homeland, and like we've lived it in our dreams. It's like a dream thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're facing the reality of Armenia, the actual Armenia,
right?
Which is not in a very good shape. And there's over 30. Last time he was, I think 33-34% unemployment rate. So you know, jobs are scarce, and so highest countries don't have enough jobs, let alone Sulia Hayes coming there. And they're not just looking for jobs. They have also, like, you know, psychological needs that need to be attended to, because some of them have lost people. Some of them have lost everything they ever had: homes, cars, families, everything. They just came with whatever they can pack in their suitcase, and it's very, very, you know, it's a very difficult situation.
Yeah.
So a lot of them are now, there's an organization called Baidun that sponsors and helps bring Armenians to Canada via Toronto or Montreal. So I think they helped about 700 families, which is wonderful.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, has there been Armenians going to Artsakh too? From Syria as well?
No, I mean, to get to Artsakh, you have to go through Armenia.
Okay.
This is the only path. So once you get there, actually, most of the towns outside of Yerevan are just villages. And let's not forget, Khalidzis are not village people; they're city people.
Right.
So adjusting to a small village, you know, I think at one point the Armenian government gave them, you know, they said, "Come, we'll give you land, we'll give you a house," but they put them in like the faraway villages by themselves, and these people were hearing like animals in the forest, and they had no neighbors, and they were like, "This is very they're city people."
Yeah,
they're city people, and they're very social people. They can't be out in the.
You know what though, Anne? I mean, those Syrians one time were part of the Western, not Western, but the Turkia. Armenians that migrated to the Middle East. I mean, these people, the Suryatsi Armenians, are very versatile, and I'm sure through it all they will make the best of it and they will survive. And you know what? For them to even have a second chance, God bless. And you got something going on right now with Karabakh, don't you? You have a project coming up?
Yeah, I'm actually going to Armenia next week, and I'll be traveling to Karabakh to shoot a movie. It's Jivan Avetisyan's a feature film. I had actually seen one of his movies a little over a year ago at a film festival. And, you know, when there's a movie produced by an Armenian, we always want to go and support it. And we, you know, we go for just out of patriotism and support.
Right.
But this movie just, you know, was like on just the regular scale of movies in general, not judging it because it's an Armenian movie and tendency to like it, I was just completely blown away. I was so proud, and I couldn't believe that it came out of Hayastan. Actually, it didn't. It came out of Karabakh, because the director is Karabakhzi. I didn't even know we had this potential, because we don't have that industry in Armenia, you know. But it was brilliant from the storyline, from the cinematography, the acting. And this movie, I mean, it screened at the Cannes Film Festival, at the film market. It, you know, it was playing here at the Pacific Theaters in Glendale. It's won 14 awards around the world.
What's
and
it about?
Last year, what?
What's it about? What's it cover?
Tevanik?
Yeah.
Tevanik is the name of the small boy.
Okay.
Basically, every movie he does is very character and character driven, like personal human stories, but always in the backdrop of the war in Karabakh, because the director is staying true to who he is and what he knows. I mean, that's what he grew up in, was a backdrop of the war in Karabakh. So basically, all his movies will tend to be something around that, because that's what he knows and that's what he writes about. But it was so personal. There was so much humanity in it. It was so beautifully done. And it's basically a movie told by... The movie is told in three different parts. The same story by three different point of views. So let's say the three of us are living in the same area,
right,
and something is happening, they'll show my story leading up to it. At the same time, then they'll go back and show yours. And you might see me in the backdrop from a previous scene that showed mine. It was very interesting.
Wow.
The way he felt. It was so beautiful. I actually contacted him as soon as I saw that movie because I just couldn't believe that this was Hayastan's movie. And the movie also was being spoken of in the Academy circles as a contender to submit for Best International, Best Foreign Film for an Academy Award.
You're kidding. How beautiful
is that?
No, that
Armenia's highest hope to enter would be this movie called Tevanik that came out of a director from Larabal. Yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. I was blown away.
Okay.
I actually went to see it three times.
I got to ask you this, too, Anne. Did you have a hard time understanding the Karabakh, the Artsakh language? Because I have a hard time with the Hayastansi language, but the Artsakhsi language, you might as well throw a frisbee over my head.
Initially, but I go to Armenia every year.
Mm.
So the Eastern Armenian is very, very easy for me to understand. I don't have a problem with that. The first time I heard Karabakhti, like pure Karabakhti Armenian, mm-hmm. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What? Wait a minute. I don't, you know. But, you know, your ear gets used to it and you sort of start getting it. So, but the movie is subtitled, so it's not that bad.
Because okay,
there's
beautiful.
People speaking Azeri in it. There's people speaking in Azeri in it. There's people speaking Hayastansi Armenian. There's someone speaking in Western Armenian. So there's different dialects and languages in there. So the whole movie is subtitled, of course. But regular Karabakhti is not that easy. No, I admit. They have their own special dialect going on.
Oh, I tell you what, Anne. I was in Armenia maybe about 6-7 years ago, and every minute there's a toast, there's a oli going around. They call it oli, I call
right.
it vodka, because our oli is with white, it turns white, and it's like
right.
Lebanese, but their oli is vodka, and you're doing so many shots. After a while, I thought I understood what they were saying, and the next morning, they brought a lamb. And the guy wanted me to actually mortel it, to butcher it. And I go, who said that? And they go, you okayed it last night. And I go, no.
What?
Take the lamb back. Go back home, guys. I have no idea what I said last night. So, you know, in any case, it's a fun place. I mean, it's very sociable. People love each other. I mean, if any Western Armenians out there that are thinking about visiting their motherland, you have to do it. Before you die, you have to go to Armenia and check it. Check
did you
out
go to
our
Karabakh
people.
Or just Armenia?
Actually, my family did, and my wife and kids, my daughter, 15 years old, said, I have to go see Artsakh, Dad. And
mm-hmm.
And I said, go ahead. I was that flight, I couldn't make it, so I had to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was great to see my conviction of my daughter saying I have to go there.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. I mean, if we all keep that spirit alive inside, I mean, how could we lose? I mean, that's beautiful.
Right.
Anyway,
yeah.
That's what's the name of that movie again?
Tevanik, Tevanik.
Okay, we'll look that up.
And the one I'm going to be working on is called The Last Inhabitant.
The
Last Inhabitant.
Page.
You can go see it. Yeah, you can go see it. I mean, it's an international cast. They have Greece's top actress in it. They have some star from Iran. They have a bunch of different. Yeah, there's two of us from the United States working on it. So it's an international cast, and they already started production. They're already shooting. My storyline doesn't happen till the end of the month, so I'm going to go a week early.
Beautiful.
And then head out there. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Next week, I was checking out one of your movies, and then at the end of the movie, it gave the credits for the music and so forth, and I looked this gentleman up named Saroj Krajian.
Saroj Krajian, yeah.
Well, he's going to be our next guest next week. So how great is that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful, yeah. So his wife is Isabel Bayraktarian, the opera singer.
And Roger Kupelian, he said to tell Ann I said hi. So Roger.
Oh, yes, of course.
He was on our show.
Yeah,
he was on our show. So anyway, we're getting all you guys on our show, which we can't appreciate enough. And hopefully this spreads. We're showing a lot of good numbers throughout the world, basically. So this is getting a little bit bigger. It's our first podcast show. It's an Armenian show. So, you know, and a lot of I watch Armenian TV sometimes, and I have a hard time understanding. They're going so fast and so forth. But this way, we're trying to make Armenians feel good about the rest of Armenia that, you know, you don't even hear about. So this is great stuff. And I appreciate having you on our show.
Thank you very much for having me. And, I mean, I found your show on iTunes.
Excellent.
I was able to go and listen to it there. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Subscribe. Yeah. Everyone should subscribe. It's a great show. We thank you for finding it.
And
thank you very much.
I appreciate it, Ann, and you're a friend of the show. If any time you're promoting something, please catch up with us, and we'd love to have you back on our show.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ann, and you have a great time in Armenia. And Bedyan, my friends.
Much.
Great. Mm-hmm. All right.
Take care.
Bye. All right. That was Ann Bedyan, my friends. God, that was a great interview.
That was
interview. I honestly could have went on for another 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I would.
It went so fast.
Her storyline, though, on Lost, like, as huge of a show as that was, her storyline was such a hugely important storyline because of how it related to, you know, to Saeed, one of the main characters, and his past and why he was how he was. I could have spent an hour just asking her about that.
I'm saying it
being
just
on
flew.
The set of Lost, and
it just flew by because I'm looking at the clock. I'm going, oh no, we're at already 25 minutes, and I'm like, I really thought it was going to be real slow. It just flew.
It did. What a great interview, though.
Yeah, it was great having Ann. And, well, Chris, you know what time it is now, don't you?
I'm already licking my chops.
It's time to get out our forks and plates and enjoy some of Mariam's cooking here. Mariam, how you doing today?
Good. Thanks for asking. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Hey, Mariam, we're dying to know what you got for us this time. What kind of recipe you got for us?
It's lahmacun.
Lahmacun.
Commonly known.
Chris, this is great stuff.
It's known Armenian pizza it's called lahmacun, but usually people say that Armenian pizza.
All right, go ahead. We're not going to even bother you. Give them the recipe.
Okay, well, this is my great-grandfather's recipe, and I have it in my book. It's very, the steps, I mean, as you know, like pizza, it has the dough and the meat, but this time it doesn't have any yeast. The one that I have, the recipe, is just sparkling water and flour. I can give you the measurements.
Yeah, or is it like how big of a 6-inch wide all around circle? Would you say it's a little bit bigger than that?
It's gonna be like tortilla.
Right. So I would say 6 to 8 inches on that. Yeah.
Okay. And
go ahead.
The ingredients are basically for the dough. It's gonna be sparkling water and flour, and the dough consistency is gonna be like very gummy. And then for the filling, it's traditionally it's made by lamb, ground lamb. But anyone who doesn't like lamb, they can use beef. I use lamb when I make it. It has parsley in it, tomatoes, onions,
Mariam, can I jump in real quick on the dough part? Because I would like to make lahmacun one time. And how do you make the dough? What do you add to the dough? Do you flours, the eggs, or how do you come out with this dough?
It doesn't have eggs. Some people use yeast. This recipe does not require any yeast. It has 2 1/4 cup room temperature sparkling water, mm-hmm. Any type will do. And then it has 4 cups of flour.
Okay.
When I was making this recipe for the book, basically I had to remake it over and over because, as you know, the grandparents never have any measurements or any gadgets.
Right.
So they kind of winked it. So I had to make it make it perfect, I mean close to perfect as much as I could. But the consistency has to be very gummy and very sticky.
I gotcha. Okay, go ahead.
And, yeah, so when you make that dough, you have to let it rest. And while it's resting, you make your meat.
How long do you let it rest?
As long as, I mean, you can let it rest an hour or 2 hours.
Okay.
You can even make it like a night before. As long as you have something on top where it doesn't stick when dry.
So minimum of 1 hour.
Yeah, that should do it.
Okay.
And then you make it in little bowls because you need to, later on, you're going to make it like a tortilla. And then the meat is, like I mentioned, it has parsley. It has parsley and mint. Those are the two things that I put, but if you want to add other ingredients in there, it's up to you, but that's the recipe. So it has about 1 bunch of parsley and tomatoes, 5 to 6 small tomatoes, or you can use canned tomato, onion. You can put it in a food processor. That's much easier. And then it's tomato paste, and then mint leaves, like a cup or so.
And
paprika.
I got one more question here. On the meat process, putting it on the dough now, you've made the tortilla size 8-6 inch, laid that out in a perfect circle. Now, when you put the meat on there, how are you assured that this meat is going to stick on to the dough?
Well, that's the tricky part. The meat has to be very, it has to be dense. It can't be too fatty. But it can't be dry either, because if it's too dry, it's not going to taste that well. That good. So you want something, for example, that has at least 20% fat in it.
Gotcha.
But if I usually use a good, I usually buy mine from Whole Foods. Not to say that you need to buy it from Whole Foods, but it has something that's good ingredients are very. That's a key aspect of this recipe.
Okay, I got you there.
So all of the mixture that goes into the meat, you can blend it, and then you can add it to the meat. And after you mix it together, you can just start making your lamb jun. This is actually a great way of getting involved, like getting your family involved. If you have guests, it's because it takes a lot of time to make, and it's when you make it, it's the best time to eat it is when it's hot.
No,
then
you're
you
definitely
your
right. Yeah, I remember as a little kid, mom would have us I guess we would play with the dough and give us a little ball to play with it. And then after a while, she'd say, you guys want to make your own little? So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And she'd have us mess around with the lemon. Why did she have us cut lemons at that age, Chris? That was dangerous.
That's okay. Like onions.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mariam.
Yeah, and lemons actually are actually good with the lamb jun, like
as
you mentioned.
Yeah.
Once it's done, when you put it in the oven, I just want to make sure that you have to have a really high temperature.
What do you think? 425 or
just like the. You depends on your oven and the altitude, I guess, but you have to have at least 475 to 500.
Wow. Okay.
It's just like pizza, you know, because temperature is the key of the, you know, for the dough to come out better.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the lamb jun.
And how long do you leave it in the oven?
I would leave the first bunch. Usually when I do the first one, it stays there because it's still not as hot. Probably 10 to 15 minutes, maybe less.
All right.
And the second and third, a little bit less, 5 to 10 minutes, depends, again, on your oven.
Beautiful. And the thing about this, Chris, is as soon as it comes out, man,
You got to get right on the lab measurement. Man.
Hey, I don't. You got to eat them warm.
Yeah, you got to eat them warm. You can't have them sit out there. Well, hey, Mariam, that was good. That was good. And where can they catch your site and your book and all that stuff? Give it to them. Let our people know about it.
Great. And the details are in the book. If you ever buy the book, it's in the recipes in there, and I posted on my page the pictures. I posted a little bit about, but I did not post the recipe. But if any one of the audience are interested, I'll definitely inbox them the recipe. They don't have to go buy the book for that.
And the book is called Cooking with My Armenian Family?
Yes.
There you go.
Cooking
there
with my Armenian family.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And thank you, Mariam, and we will hear your next recipe next week. That was great.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Great. Take care.
Thank you.
That was Mariam.
You too.
What a great show.
That was
just... what a great show. I have Ann Bedyan on my show, and then I got Mariam with a nice recipe here.
That was a great recipe. I think
that was a great recipe.
The best one yet.
Yeah, I think so too, because that brought back some memories there. And man, I tell you what, Chris, I'm not kidding with you. That interview with Ando, I could have went an hour talking to her.
Yeah, we're gonna have to have her on again.
Oh
soon.
God, it was beautiful. And maybe when she gets back from Armenia, she can let us know how that went and so forth. Because I tell you what. Time flew by talking to her.
Oh man, I could hear a whole show just about her experience in the military. I mean, with having to get a special release to go in early and
That alone. I mean, that's a whole segment right there. But in any case, we had a great show. Ann Bedyan and Mariam came through with a great recipe that I'm very familiar with. And my friends, listen to our show. Catch up on us on iTunes. Where can they get a hold of us?
Yeah, well, also on the Stitcher app for Android. You just have to, if you have an Android phone or something that's not an iPhone, download the Stitcher app and just search for the show, Armenia Proud, and you can stream it there. You download it there. Also on iTunes. Obviously, on your Mac devices, Apple devices, and ArmeniaProud.com.
And also, check us out on A Toast to Armenia on Facebook.
Yep.
I mean, we could sure use more friends like you guys out there. And like I said, worldwide, we're hearing it from people in Belgium, France, Armenia, Russia, Argentina.
Yeah, all
God bless
the
you
world.
Guys. We appreciate it very much. I thought it was just going to be L.A. and Armenia. Far from it. I mean, when you got people from Russia chiming in, from Belgium, God bless you all, and I'm glad you guys like the show. And that'll do our show for this week. Kishe party, my friends. Be strong, and always love each other.
Tune in next week for another episode of
Genatset Hayer,
A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. You can find the show online at www.armeniaproud.com or download and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher for Android. This is the Ignotainment Media Network.